Given the thumbs up to move ahead, welcome everybody. I thank everyone for making it. 4:45 on the first night at Tech Ed in a town like New Orleans is kind of hard to make it sometimes to these. And we're all the way at the end of the building here, so thank you. The good news is at 6 o'clock, you can go downstairs to the Tech Expo Hall, and there's going to be a lot of free beer, good food, and good information down there. So good things to look forward to. I think good session, we hope. Answer a lot of questions here as well. My name is Craig Ashley. I'm a senior product manager at Microsoft on the Windows to Go team. We'll be covering quite a few things. I have just a few kind of general objectives here, and these are very similar to what was in the session overview. First is obviously review key deployment scenarios. I always kind of struggle with myself on the licensing piece. So we'll cover it just a little bit just to understand the scenarios, because it is important with Windows to Go being an enterprise feature. So if you don't want to hear it, plug your ears. We won't spend a lot of time on it, I promise. The next one is, how is Windows to Go different than Windows? And we'll spend time in there as well. It's getting a little better, and we'll talk about that, just in terms of something that wasn't here with 8 and is here with 8.1. And then finally, we'll go through providing a little bit of guidance and some demos on some deployment pieces, script provisioning. We'll show the creator tool. We'll show the experience itself. And then we'll be done, and we'll be beer o'clock. Something has to get some excitement here, and beer usually does it. I was telling my wife and kids, this is completely off topic. I was telling my wife and kids, we hadn't been here since 1997, and I'd forgotten why they put antiseptic down on the roads every night. But being here during the day, you figure that out. So why are we talking about this from a very high-level perspective? Because people work differently. BYOD is really moving forward. And Windows to Go presents some interesting use cases here that can help us on a lot of these situations here. So if we think about Windows to Go, and I used to open this one by asking how many people have tried Windows to Go, or initially asking who's heard about Windows to Go. Now I kind of switch, and I like to see who has moved beyond that, who has deployed, even if it's just a few Windows to Go drives. Can we show just a quick show of hands and see if there are some people in here? So we're kind of moving into that point here. People say, well, you know, what's it look like? What do the deployment numbers look like? Windows 8 is really only about 6 months old. We launched it late October last year. So we're seeing that now. We're seeing the enterprises who have chosen to start deploying move into that. So it's good to see hands of people who are looking at the deployment piece here. So I still like to go over this. What is Windows to Go? How is it different? Because it's certainly different. If we think our usual PC, how do we boot? We have the operating system on the hard drive of the machine, and we boot from that, kind of on the left here. Windows to Go, completely different. We have imaged Windows 8 onto a certified drive, and we're booting from the drive itself. Now, the support statement there is across Windows 7 and Windows 8 certified PCs, and as long as they'll boot, they should get a good experience of Windows to Go on that device. We'll talk more about these drives in just a little while here. Inside the office, we do this, but also we see one of the great things is on the go, that this is a great scenario for as well. So I may have a desktop at work, but if I have a Windows to Go drive, I could take that with me and I could boot it on my home PC or a PC someplace else that I can boot from. So main difference there, obviously, USB boot versus booting from the drive that we have in our PC. Obviously, benefits we've talked about there. So what I'd like to switch really quickly, I'm going to switch and show you the user experience. What does the user experience with a Windows to Go drive specifically if you haven't used it yourself? So we'll switch machines. And what I have here is one of my work machines. And I like to pull up the hard drive on that just to show some of the security pieces, the policy pieces that were put in place with Windows to Go. Right now I'm showing my hard drive. You can see how much space I've used on there. I'm going to plug the Windows to Go drive in that I've already imaged into my USB port on the side of my machine. Now, what we would expect to happen if we plug a USB drive in would be I'd get a little highlight down in the bottom, and under local disk C, it would pop up and it would say, you have a USB drive in here. What do you want to do with it? Windows to Go is built offline by default. That means if I plug it into a running machine, I don't have access to the data that's on that. And the same thing will happen, we'll show, if we have Windows to Go running, the hard drive of the machine that I'm booted from is offline as well. So bear with me. I'm going to go ahead and restart my machine here. Simply do a restart. Now my PC in this process is going to go ahead and shut down. If this was the very first time I'd ever used this Windows to Go drive, it would be just like using Windows the first time on a new machine. It'd go through the UBI, the out-of-box experience. I'd go through the preferences. I'd do everything. I'd put my service account in, everything that needs to be done for that. The second time I boot from that same machine, it's going to boot much faster. And this is probably my bad. I may have some updates here at this point, which are getting in my way of restarting here. So we'll force this down and start it back up. But the second time I start a Windows to Go drive from the same machine, it will have already done what we call specialize. And what the specialize is it's looking across the hardware on the machine and checking for drivers. Does it need something new? Does it need a new display driver to work appropriately on that machine? And if it does, the intended action is it would go up to Windows Update, and it would pull that, and it would insert what's required to go ahead and boot from that. So we're starting to boot up here. As it goes through, what you guys can't see now is my BitLocker password screen has just come up. So we suggest, obviously, putting BitLocker on here. I've heard customers say it's not when I lose it, or it's not if I lose it, it's when I lose it. And in that case, if it's BitLocker protected, the data will be inaccessible. So I just put that in. It will start booting up into the Windows to Go piece itself here. And then the two things that I want to show as soon as this comes up on here, I want to show you the hard drive, because we're going to see the exact opposite of what we showed when I showed the hard drive on my main machine. We're going to see the hard drive as the Windows to Go drive at this point, and we'll see the difference in the size there. Then the other thing that I typically like to show is I have a video on this machine on the USB drive itself, and we'll run it over this to show the kind of the high fidelity experience that we have. So we get to the lock screen, put my password in, and if it likes it, it'll launch us into, again, a personalized version of Windows 8. So my name, everything on here, similar to the start screen that I have on my normal PC. I can scroll back and forth and see all of those. If I go to the desktop, and again, pull up that hard drive, I really have a lot on this drive right now. It's a 32 gigabyte drive, but I've got Office. I have an ISO on here. I can create other Windows to Go drives specifically for this one for those purposes. We've really kind of seen people deploying that the 64 gigabyte flashes is kind of the space that we've seen makes sense the most, because you can store a little more on there if you want to store stuff on that. But the other piece here is I wanted to show you this Connect video. It's a simple video that I have, but it's on the USB drive. It's not on the machine. So the only thing it's doing is it's running from the USB drive, and it's utilizing the system resources. And you'll see it's not jittery. These are just some display things, not that itself. The audio runs really well. It's a high fidelity experience. The end user wouldn't know this is on a Windows to Go drive if we didn't tell them, or they saw it plugged in at this point. So the experience is just as great. We'll talk a little bit about how we've worked with our drive vendors to support that. The thing I like to show here is a little thing that we built in called resiliency to unintended removal. And what that means, I'll go ahead and I'll mute my sound there. My boys at home play a little game with me. I bring a lot of these home, and I have three boys from 5 to 12. And I show them the demos a lot of times just to get them to say kind of wow. What they've started to do is they play this game that takes part in this. My 5-year-old will distract me. He'll ask me for chocolate milk or just something like that. And then one of the other two guys, my 9-year-old or my 12-year-old, will pull the USB drive out. Now the game here is that I have 60 seconds to get this drive back in, or they've won. If my 12-year-old has it, I don't have a chance anymore. But if my 9-year-old has it, I can usually get this back. So the goal here is to get this back in to the same USB port that it was pulled out of, and I'll receive this message which says, hey, don't do that. I like to win, so I try to get it back in as much as possible. This is to keep it working in case it gets bumped, so it's a continuity benefit, but it's also a security aspect. I can't plug it into another USB port and get it to start again, even on the same machine. Somebody could not walk by, say, in an airport, grab it, and plug it into their machine and get it to start up. They would have to boot it completely new again. They'd have to put in their BitLocker password to unencrypt it, and they would have to log in. So it serves a couple main purposes there, why this was built in. And again, it's 60 seconds to get that back in and win the game. going to switch back to our PowerPoint slides there. So think about the use cases, what we see deploying. Initially, back when this feature was first thought about 3-4 years ago, they were thinking about, you know, what could we have come out new in Windows 8. This one called shared PCs was one of the first reasons why it was created. And this came a little bit more out of the public sector space, because some of the armed forces wanted to remove all the weight, all the laptops, all the things that they would carry in their backpacks. They found that the less weight, obviously, the less chance of somebody getting hurt. So that was kind of where this popped up. But what we've seen as we go across and we talk to customers and we look at deployment models and what we're doing, we see kind of the ones on the far left there, the contractor and the BYOD scenarios, are really taking hold. And what we mean by that is they're both very similar in terms of how they work. A contractor would come in for 90 days, a vendor, and instead of having to provision them a PC or do anything to their PC or grant them access on their machine, we would give them a Windows to Go drive, which is fully provisioned. If it needs a VPN client, it's got it on there. It has the right group policies. It has the right things locked down that they can do just what we need them to do. And at the end of that 90 days, they can give us back that Windows to Go drive instead of going through PCs and worrying about an asset as expensive as that coming back. The BYOD is the same thing. If we have employees that want to bring their machine into work or use their machine at home, it's very similar. We would just provision them a Windows to Go drive. We wouldn't be touching their machine, right? There's no bleed through between the two. They're not accessing each other back and forth. And then they would do their work on the Windows to Go drive. And when they're done, they'd boot up from their host machine. An interesting one we saw as well, and this is one of the things that comes up, and we hadn't highlighted this, but up and running on Windows 8 is kind of a trial and a testing. One of our early adopter customers, Emirates Airlines, if you saw the keynote this morning, they were highlighted because they have the KISS app, which is what their bursars use to help top-tier clients on their airlines. Early on in Windows 8, there weren't a lot of touch tablets out there. So they used Samsung Series 7 slates, which were Windows 7 slates, and they had Windows 7 on them. And then they used Windows to Go drives to give the new app to those users to test on that touch device and to take home and to learn it. Then when the HP devices that they were going to purchase came out, they had Windows 8 on those. And they only used Windows to Go in that case for that one specific use case. So that's an interesting one that we've seen. Let's get our users to test or trial Windows 8. But their main machine still has, hopefully it's Windows 7 by this time, right, on it. And we know there's still some other ones out there at this point, XP. But it gives a nice test and trial capability. This is the licensing piece, so if you want to plug your ears. I mentioned that Windows to Go is an enterprise feature, so it's part of the enterprise SKU. It comes with software assurance, so you have to have software assurance to get the use rights for this. I'm going to go through these relatively quickly, but thinking of Travel Lighter at work, this scenario is where I'm a main user and I have my PC is covered by software assurance at work. I have the rights under that to use Windows to Go. So I have the rights to have a Windows to Go stick because I'm a primary user on a device covered by software assurance. The great thing about that is that means while I'm in the office, I can only use it on my SA-covered device. But when I leave, I get what's called roaming rights. And this is the beauty of the Windows to Go. If I'm covered in this case in the office, then when I leave, I can use it on any machine, covered or uncovered by SA out of the office, that I can plug it in and to boot it from. And we're completely within licensing capabilities here. The bring your own device and the contingent staff, we kind of lump together here because, again, they're very similar in terms of how they're deployed. And from a licensing structure, they're similar as well. The idea here is that we're going to have a user bringing a device in. We would suggest two different things. If for the primary device, for a BYOD scenario, if that end user is going to have that for a long time, you can cover that by software assurance as well. But the other thing we would suggest in this scenario, which could make sense, is covering that device by VDA in both of these. And the reason we say that is because VDA has redistribution rights every 90 days. Software assurance is tied to the device until the device dies. So that's kind of the distinction that we make here from that perspective. The last one here is the shared PCs. And this one is really kind of an interesting one because in this case, we're going to have, and this could be a call center, where we're going to have a bunch of people coming in, and they're not going to be the primary user on any device. For every software assurance covered machine, we can create two Windows to Go drives. And then people can use those drives on the machines. So the way that this works out nicely, and we've seen some enterprises doing it, is my accounting department's PCs are all covered by software assurance. So are the ones that are in the call center. So if I have 500 between those two, I can create 1,000 Windows to Go drives to be used on those SA-covered machines. It's great for the call center people. The accountants, right? The accounting people are probably never going to need that Windows to Go drive. So the people that are using those and that those are going to be given to are the ones in the call center to use on these shared devices that are covered by software assurance. So that's the 3-minute run through of probably a 100-page document there in how this kind of boils down from that perspective. So Windows to Go versus Windows, what are the differences here, and how do they both work the same or work differently? In terms of protecting the corporate data, one of the things that we had to do, because Windows to Go was on a removable drive, and it would not match with the TPM chip. If we think how BitLocker works, BitLocker plus PIN requires TPM, and that's how it's provisioned. Because this is a USB drive, it doesn't have access to the same TPM chip if I'm roaming to a bunch of different ones. So that mentality doesn't work. TPM plus PIN doesn't work. So we had to introduce a new password protector, which was a password. And it can be up to, I think it's 250 some, if we wanted to specify that, keys for that, which is really long. But it's a password that was for this. And through all of the provisioning materials, System Center, those types of things, we had to create the ability to support this new password on this and recognize the Windows to Go device as a drive different from this. So that was something that was new. But BitLocker, aside from that, works exactly the same, encrypts it just like it would. It's not BitLocker to Go, if we're familiar with that on other USB drives. This is full-blown BitLocker, manageable now in M.2013 through MBAM. So if you have BitLocker on your main PCs, you can do the same thing and use MBAM to manage all of the pieces associated with BitLocker as well. The trusted boot process works exactly the same. So if you've seen any of the security pieces, if we think about why Windows 8, some of the security things that have been moved forward purely by using Windows 8 without new hardware or anything are incredible. And Windows to Go takes advantage of that as well, the trusted boot process, early loading, anti-malware. All of those pieces that are the great pieces of Windows function just the same on Windows to Go as well. And then any of the other pieces, and this is a good one to look at here, any of the other Windows security offerings, again, work on here as well. Or if you want to load other things on here, third-party VPN clients, desktop applications, anything that you would do on the Windows PC that you're going to load on there, right, is going to load and, for the most part, work across Windows to Go as well, because it is just Windows booting from the hard drive versus from the internal. I showed this on there, so I won't spend a ton of time on a lot of this or rehashing it, but the host internal drives are offline by default through the provisioning process. Additionally, a couple things to note on here. External storage devices could be accessible, so I could plug a USB drive into another port and save to it or access it. I have access to everything on that machine but the hard drive. But we did create a SAN policy, which you could lock down, which this is interesting. You have Windows to Go plugged in and you're using it. You could lock down access to other USB ports on there as well through group policy. So that was something that came through Windows 8 as a result of using Windows to Go at this point. And of course, all of these things are controlled by group policy objects. Booting from USB is pretty straightforward in Windows 8. If you've used Windows 8 so far, it's a radio button, more or less. You can go from the start screen and search for Windows to Go startup. You click on it, and the bottom comes up here. And it says, do you want to automatically set your PC up to boot from Windows to Go workspace? So we'd click yes on there, and then if I had it there to boot, I would. If we're not running Windows 8, we have a different operating system on that machine. It is different. There is not a radio button on other operating systems. In Windows 7 and previous Windows operating systems, there are hotkeys. And those hotkeys, like an F12 to boot, F11, differ by vendor. So a Dell might be different than an HP. And you can find those. And what you would do in that instance is you would put the Windows to Go drive in, and as you're booting, hold down the hotkey. And then you would select boot from USB there. You can also configure those machines to boot from BIOS, or in BIOS to boot from USB. to move USB up in the boot process. So just like in Windows 8, it's not a radio button. You do a little more work in the BIOS, but it will boot every time from that, from USB, if you have the right thing plugged in there to do that. So a couple different ways. TechNet, if you're a TechNet fanatic and you like all the information that's on TechNet, there's a lot of good information, a lot of articles on this. We have some FAQs and some suggestions on some of the top manufacturers, and then links to those as well to point people to if you have questions about how exactly do we set this up here. And I mentioned the full fidelity experience here, and we showed the video here. So on the top one, we showed the video. It was great. We didn't know it was running on Windows to Go at this point. A lot of that, and we'll speak in just a minute, is because of some of the work we've done with Drive partners in this as well. Things to think about here. In the Windows 8 timeframe, if you've deployed Windows to Go or taken a good hard look at it, you probably know this. The Windows Store is disabled by default on Windows to Go. And in Windows 8, the reasoning for that is because the Windows Store works on a retail licensing model, and it only allows you to use those new Windows Store apps on 5 machines. So the Windows Store thinks every machine you plug Windows to Go in is a new machine. So by default in Windows 8, we have that disabled. Now for users that don't roam, you could turn that on. Additionally, if we think of sideloading line of business apps, so if you sideload those, they're not coming down from the Windows Store, those are unaffected at this point on a Windows 8 machine. We heard a lot of feedback in the past 6 months about this, a lot of feedback in terms of use cases that they'd like to use Windows to Go for, where it would be nice to have the apps be able to be downloaded as a distribution model from the Windows Store. So this is one of the main things that we've been focused on when we think about 8.1 that's coming out with Windows to Go. Now, we have Windows Store enabled by default. We've worked on the back end to help the Windows Store recognize Windows to Go as a Windows to Go device, so it looks like a single machine, not every machine that it's been plugged into. So moving forward through the provisioning process, we've removed that local group policy object, which did not allow Windows to Go to hit the store. So again, it's becoming more just like Windows at this point, and you'll be able to do all of those great things that you would expect with Windows on your Windows to Go drive. Nothing's changed with the line of business sideloading. That stayed the same. They still work. Nothing's changed there. Now, if we think of moving between machines, and I highlighted this a little bit as well, on the first one, it specializes. So the first boot on a machine, it specializes. Then it remembers that. So I could go from machine A to machine B. Machine B, it would specialize again. And then I could go back to machine A, and it would still have what was necessary to boot on that. And the boot process would be, you know, the same we would expect on the same machine over and over again. We also did something in terms of the provisioning process, which created a FAT32 disk partition to allow Windows to Go drives to boot across old, kind of the legacy BIOS systems that we see pre-Windows 8, as well as across the UEFI boot systems, which we will see with all new Windows 8 and then moving further, Windows 8.1 devices as well. So a single Windows to Go drive does not have to be built just for BIOS or just for UEFI, because to an end user, who knows what I'm plugging into at this point? It doesn't tell me on the machine. I have two machines here, a Windows 7 X1 and a Windows 8 X1, and neither of them say BIOS and neither of them say UEFI. So it's a nice to help in that boot process there. So just a couple other differences here that we like to highlight. Because of disk space mainly, when we're provisioning Windows to Go, the Windows recovery environment is not included on that. And we've heard from a lot of enterprises, just because of disk space and all sorts of things, that sometimes they just simply remove that in the imaging process anyway. But it's not available. So what does that mean? That means that one of the Windows 8 features, refresh or reset your PC, isn't available on a Windows to Go drive. We simply suggest if you have a problem with your Windows to Go drive, re-image it at this point, and then get everything back to your normal state. If anybody in here has MDOT, DART, Diagnostics and Recovery Toolset, because it has to come through this Windows recovery environment, it also is not going to work with Windows to Go at this point. We've only heard from a couple customers, so if anybody's really interested in that functionality, we certainly love to hear about either of these. Absolutely, I have to have it, or you know, no, that's good. So certainly interested to hear if DART's something with Windows to Go. It was something that we looked at initially and then just decided from a use case perspective, let's hold back and see if we see it's a blocker. Other things to think about, Hibernate is disabled by default. If it goes into Hibernate, we don't necessarily know if it's on or off. And again, if you unplug a machine, the Windows to Go drive, and you plug it into something else and you try to boot it up, it's just not a fantastic experience from that perspective. And if a user doesn't know what state it's in, you know, that's what happens there. We certainly do suggest, even though we have that unintended resiliency to unintended removal, best practice is exactly like best practice on a PC. We don't want to shut down, or we don't want to just pull it out. We want to shut it down every time. It certainly is best practice to do that. Depending on the state of the drive and what's happening on that, data could be corrupted. It is equivalent to ripping your hard drive out while it's running. In essence, that's what it is. We've just built some things around it to ease that process a little bit. And the last thing to mention, supported on PC certified for use with Windows 7 and 8. Main reason for that is we need drivers to be in Windows Update to support this. If drivers aren't in Windows Update through the specialization process, we won't have them. That means on something that's not a Windows 7 or a Windows 8 certified machine, a really super old XP one, we might not have that. If we have a machine that's not a Windows machine, we certainly wouldn't have those drivers as well. Certain keys might not work, mapping of things don't work, things might not project, network drivers might not be there because we don't have those in Woo too to support that. So that is really the main reason we have that statement with Windows to Go. Windows to Go drives. So the important thing here from Windows to get this experience that we've been showing is to use one of the certified drives. And I have all the bullet points up here that you can take a look at. We have these on TechNet as well, detailed in pretty good process here. But what our drive vendors do, and we have 5 partners right now, I'll show them on the next slide, and 8 drives, 7 that are certified, 1 that's in beta right now, they work with us through this process to make sure that a drive will boot across a whole bunch of machines and that they get great performance. And then they warranty that as well. So a drive like this is equivalent to really a mini SSD, working incredibly well, giving us this type of capabilities, and really to be with us for the long run as we're booting from a bunch of machines and powering up and powering down, doing tons of reads and writes and all the random access things that we do. We do only support, so Microsoft will only support certified drives. So what does that mean? It means that you might be able to image Windows on another one that's not supported, but if you run into an issue with it and you call Microsoft support, they will find out what you're using, and if it's not one of these, then they'll say, you know, well, we might do best effort, but we can't really help you with that. We would suggest you get one of these guys, which is on the next slide here. These are the ones that have gone through the certification process, and we would suggest using, and we have this list on TechNet as well. They're all listed up here. There's a couple on here we like to highlight, the Iron Key one and the Spyrus one, because they bring something additional. They bring hardware-based or device encryption, as well as some other management capabilities that we don't provide in box. Imation, Iron Key is here as well. They're at booth 2301, so they are showing. So I would suggest if you're interested in seeing those drives, stop by and talk to them about the security aspects of that. We're also demoing Windows to Go at the Windows Experience booth in the center of the kind of pavilion hall as well. Another kind of interesting one, which kind of steps out, is my Passport. So you can see the difference there. That's a 500 gigabyte drive. It's the only one of these that's a spinning drive, which is why you get one that's that big, you get a 500 gigabyte drive. But it's passed, you know, the certification and all the requirements as well. So for evaluation, I'm going to build this one up, and then I'm going to show it really quickly here on my machine in a minute. There's a few different ways. We're kind of switching gears now, and we're talking about, well, how do we get Windows to Go onto the drive, and what makes sense for my company, my business, to do this? If you're evaluating, or you're just going to do one-off builds of Windows to Go drives, utilizing the Inbox Creator tool is a simple way to do that. So if you have administrative access on your machine, you search for Windows to Go from the start screen, and you pull up this process here. And again, we really suggest this only for single images. You can do everything that's necessary for any drive on this, but you're going to create one drive at a time. It's a 10 to 15 minute process. It's not necessarily the fastest way to do this. So let me show you what that looks like really quickly on the machine. I promise I won't make us wait for the 10 to 15 minutes while it does this. So I'm on the start screen. I would simply just start typing Windows to Go. And the integrated search will find this across anything with Windows to Go. So I've got 1,100 files or something like that that has it. But what I'm interested in are the settings. And there's two settings on here. The change Windows to Go startup was to boot from USB every time. But the Windows to Go piece here is this creator tool. And when it pops up, it's doing a couple things. It's searching for a drive. So it's searching for a certified drive. So let me plug one in here really quickly. And now it's not doing what it's supposed to be doing. This was supposed to tell me my drive was not big enough. Because it says a 14.5 gigabyte drive. I don't honestly know why it didn't do that to me. We suggest a 32 gigabyte drive, and it should pop up a message that says, this device doesn't meet the requirements for that size from that perspective. So I apologize. That's a bum demo right there. Let me plug in one of the certified drives here. And then with this one, you're going to see it does do something. It's going to recognize the drive itself. So this is completely different. Before, it just said it was a USB drive. In this one, it comes up with specifically the name of the certified drive that we're going to use. Now, what I would do is I would click on that because that's the one I want to use. I want to click Next. The one thing that I did and that Windows 8 will do, which is kind of nice, Windows 8 will allow you to mount an ISO straight from the disk. So I did that ahead of time. I have an ISO on my machine. I mounted it. Windows, the creator tool, is going to search for that and find any ISOs that are mounted, and then it's going to ask me if I want to use that. So if I had multiple ones here, I could pick and choose. From here, I would simply click Next, because yes, I do want to use that one. And then I could use BitLocker at this point. I could enable it, and I could put a password in, and I could go through the whole process to enable it through here. I could skip it as well. And then on the next one, and I'm not going to go through that because I don't want this to kick off that whole process, I would simply click Go. And then it's going to give me kind of that green running timeline as it goes through the process of provisioning Windows to Go. It could be done in as fast as 6 or 7 minutes if you have a really small image. If you're imaging a bunch of stuff on there, if you're using a WIM file that's custom and you have Office and other applications, other things that you have on there, it could be a 15-minute process. It just depends on how much data. How big is that file that you're imaging that Windows to Go drive with? So there are things you can do. This one won't. So the question was, would the creator tool allow me to integrate with MBAM and have the recovery keys that are created sent up? No, this is going to store it locally, and then if you're using MBAM, later on down the road, you're going to go through the process of having the keys uploaded. If you're using System Center or some of the script process, I don't have the System Center demo. I have some shots to show what that looks like. But if you're using one of those two, you can integrate the ability to have those keys delivered to MBAM through the provisioning process. This one doesn't do it, again, because we do suggest this is just the evaluation kind of a tool at this point. So we did the demo. Let's talk deployment. So deployment scenarios kind of vary here overall. In terms of provisioning for central deployment, if we want to think about that, we talked about evaluation. This is kind of the next step. There's a couple different ways to do this. We have scripts, a lot of scripts up online, and I have kind of a click-through walkthrough of what that looks like using the provisioning scripts and the steps that goes through to provision a drive. And if we use these scripts, it's typically from a centralized location. So we would have someone who's doing this, someone that's managing this process. The scripts are not something that we would provide to an end user and allow them to do. They would script and get the drives ready to go. There are things that we could do here, right? We could have the users boot, or I'm sorry, they could work to come in to work to join the domain. There is offline domain join, a blob that we could put in the process that they could do an offline domain join as well. We have that in the script that we're going to run through, so it is a capability that could be utilized there. The end output of this, of course, is that we would provide an end user with everything that's required, and we just hand them the drive. And on the first boot, they could personalize it and do those types of things. And if they needed to do the domain join, if that was something we wanted them to do, they could do that. Now, the one thing to make clear, we've talked a lot about the domain join just in this point. You don't have to domain join a Windows to Go drive. So it's an enterprise level feature, correct, but it doesn't have to be domain joined. So I just, we don't ever really talk about that much, but it doesn't have to be. We also have user self-provisioning. So shortly after Windows 8 came out, System Center 2012 Configuration Manager SP1 came out. And in essence, we'll kind of show what that looks like. They took a version of the Creator tool and included it in the System Center provisioning process to really go from a centralized provisioning to being able to allow end users to access through the app catalog and be able to create their own drives. But the nice thing about that is the end user only has to have the Windows to go drive. We're not giving them an image. We're not giving them everything. We're not telling them they have to go through the scripting process. That's all part of System Center, and it's deploying it to a drive that I have plugged into my machine. That's the way that we see the majority of customers doing their deployments today, because it reaches a bigger audience at this point. So the IT admin experience, if we're thinking about the provisioning process, which is the scripting, they use the PowerShell scripts that we have up on TechNet, and they can be modified to support and to do additional things. Well, it's just, again, a PowerShell script that's up there. We also have, and this is an interesting one, the majority of the PowerShell scripts, and the one I'll show you today, are for doing this on a Windows 8 device. One of our early adopters said, you know, that's great, but we'd also like the ability to do the same thing from a Windows 7 device. There's no creator tool on Windows 7 to do this. The deployment team tested and created command scripts so that it's a very similar process. You could utilize these on a Windows 7, so you'd have to make the distinction between which one you're utilizing for the OS that you're creating from. And of course, we mentioned the advanced options like BitLocker at deployment time and the offline domain join. That's all the IT admin is going to do. The user in this one, they're going to get the drive. Just like it says on here, they'll receive it. The first boot, if offline domain join and the credentials are on there, could be at home if we have direct access running from this, just like a PC. I'd give them the drive and they'd boot it up. The offline domain join blob is on there, kicks in, group policy starts going back and forth, direct access gets enabled, and it works that way. That really only works in this provisioning one. System Center, when we talk about that, it'll have to be booted the first time the way it's provisioned on the corporate network. So that is a distinction kind of between these two as well, the provisioning script process versus System Center, about where we can plug it in and boot the first time. And then they go through the out-of-box experience, and they'd use it just like they wanted to from that point forward. So let me switch over to this machine again here, and let's look at the general script here. All right. So I had this working just a second ago. Looks like it's giving me elevation. I think what we didn't do, Craig didn't do, was open up an elevated command prompt. All right. Crossing my fingers here that we've got it that time. So the first step here is simply it's going to go through, and we're going to start the process. Again, this is a script. I have all of the package details already together in the same file. So the script is going to point to everything that's required. It's going to point to the WIM file. It's going to point to all the other information. The offline domain join blob is all going to be in that right file there, and it's going to be ready to go. With my fingers crossed here, yes. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to find all devices that are connected, USBs. So again, I have the device in my USB port. It's found it there. It's recognized it just like the Creator tool. Once it finds that, we'll hit enter again. It is going to give me a warning here in this script that says, when I start this process and I get it kicked off, I'm going to overwrite everything that's on that device. Very similar to if you're writing on a USB drive at this point as well. So I'm going to say, yes, got that. Goes through checks. Are you sure? Hit enter. This process takes just a minute. After we get to the point where it starts imaging, we'll switch back to the slides here and finish up a little bit of the discourse on there. But it's going through the process exactly what it says on there. If I hit it on, if I hit enter again here and don't wait for the command line prompt to come up, then it'll give me a couple of errors here. So hopefully it'll kick along here and be nice to us. Sure, it's a great time for it. So what System Center, and again, System Center, Configuration Manager, 2012 SP1, that whole line, they built in there so it recognizes Windows to Go as the drive itself, not the device that you're plugging into. So different from 2007 or not using SP1, where it would look at the hardware and every device you plugged Windows to Go in would now be under that name in System Center. The steps they moved to SP1 was to fix those steps and to recognize it as the drive itself. Not exactly like, but similar to the work that we did for Windows Store, so that Windows Store would now recognize it as a drive, not as a hash of the hardware that it was plugged into and booting from at that point. Yes? Yes. Sideloading is, there's multiple ways to get apps to a machine. You could get them, the new apps, Windows Store apps, you could download it from the Windows Store. Or you could sideload. Sideloading is a process where through PowerShell, or you could use Intune or System Center, would load it on. It's a fancy name for loading a new Windows application. So sideloading is going around the Windows Store and loading it through one of those other mechanisms there. All right, so it looks like, I didn't see what we got there, but looks like we're ready there. So we're get it configured. These are the enable BitLocker commands here. So this process, this provisioning script, is going to go ahead and enable BitLocker encryption. It's pretty quick here. It also tells me where, and you can find this afterwards in this process for this one. It's telling me the recovery key and where it's saved it to here in the unattended files. So from here, we're going to get this guy going. This is the big one. This is the DISM commandlet that's actually going to apply the image that I have to my machine here. This is where we're going to break and let it go ahead and do its job here. This is the one which takes a little bit of time to get the image on the machine. I've seen some, depending if they're smaller, could take just as little as 6 minutes. You know, some could take a little bit more to image there as well. So let's switch back to the PowerPoint at this stage. So the question was, can the stick be time-bombed? We don't provide that capability in Windows. A couple of our drive partners, again, IronKey, who's here, and Spyrus, provide additional management capabilities. It's not time-bomb, but it's more of a remote kill type of a capability, that if it surfaces again to the internet, it's going to send it, and it's not going to be usable to get the data on that point. One of the things to think about in terms of time-bombing as well is that these require AD or KMS-based activation. Most volume licensing at large level uses those types of activation models as well. So if you're not checking in within the time frame there, Windows is going to go disgenuine, and that's not a great experience in Windows 8 if you've seen that. Before, you could maybe get by because you'd get some watermarkings on previous versions. In Windows 8, it's a very short time frame where the screen goes black and it's going back and forth and you're booting up again, doing all sorts of things. So in Windows, that activation thing's the closest. But if you're interested in that, some of our drive partners are offering that additional capability as well. So I could use this provisioning script process. Quick question? Sure. Yes, because what will happen, so our support statement, the question was, it doesn't support Mac, it only supports KMS or AD based, and the answer to support is yes. Now the reasoning for that is, it will activate, but every machine you move to, if you have a Mac key, you're going to have to add another Mac key. KMS doesn't work that way. The way that KMS activation works is that you have to check in every once in a while. That's what saves the Windows to Go process, is that Windows to Go is checking back in with the KMS server. If you wanted to use it only on a single machine and you weren't going to roam, you could use a Mac key. But if you're a big enterprise and you have, let's say, 20,000 Mac keys, and you have 5,000 Windows to Go users, in a week they could be on four machines and you could have used all those. You might get a one-time, okay, we'll give you more, but after that, the licensing, the long arm of the licensing is going to get a little skeptical of that. So we could go through this process and we could create a drive that's ready to go to be duplicated. So this scripted process, even the using the creator tool, could get us to a point where we could do a broader mass deployment, if you will, using a disk duplicator of this. When we typically do some handouts or have events or something like that where we would do that, we would create a single drive and just duplicate whole bunches of those across a whole bunch of different things. Additionally, the drive partners and other companies that you're using for imaging may have a provisioning process for you. So they're very used to provisioning these drives. You provide them with your gold image of what you need on there, and they'll get it ready to go for you. So one of the things, all the scripting is PowerShell based. So in essence, we have a duplicator, which we could duplicate. They'd all turn out exactly the same. We could use a PowerShell plus a USB hub, which would allow us for some unique drive creation across those. There's some limitations to the numbers that we can really do on a single machine at this point into a hub. But what that means is we could use that script process and using some of the parallel capabilities, if you're familiar with PowerShell, to run these on multiple machines at the same time with some customization through there. So there are multiple ways using the script process that we can do a bunch of drives. It doesn't just have to be a single drive at a time to get to where we want to go here. All right, we're about 40% on our script here. So deployment, think System Center now, which again is what we see the majority of our bigger customers looking to deploy Windows to Go with. There's a couple things we want to look at here. The IT admin experience on that, and I've got a few screenshots we'll show. Sometimes we bring the demo along for that, but we find any time I throw a server into my demo, it really tends to get a little crazy. Even if it's something simple as printing during a keynote demo, the server sometimes goes awry there. He'll probably kill me for that one. From an IT admin user experience, just exactly what you're doing for the most part on System Center today, you're doing all of the same things to create the images, the task sequences, all of those same pieces that you would do today are going to work from a Windows to Go perspective. And that's how we would do this. Then you would deploy that package to the appropriate users. And then from an end user experience perspective, this is kind of the nice one. What we give the end users ahead of time is just a blank, you know, one of the certified Windows to Go drives. We let them know that this is ready for them, and then they go into the app catalog and they take the next steps to go ahead and get that ready to go. So it's almost like, it takes a little bit longer, but it's almost like going to the app catalog to pull down Adobe Reader or any other application you're going to set up there that you want the user to pull down and to load onto their machine using System Center. As I mentioned, the thing to think about here, this one does require a reboot on CorpNet to complete the provisioning process. Okay. All the things that would happen there. A little different than the scripting process, which isn't absolutely going to require that. And then, of course, the creator tool doesn't require that at all as well. We're about 75% here. Actually, I have them on this machine. So what I did try to do here was to capture some of these, to show the System Center, and then the end user experience on these. So this is the creating the task sequence editor. And what you'll see, a whole bunch of things up here which are very similar to, right, what we would expect this to be. And we would step through every one. This is 12 clicks, 13 clicks through this process to get all the checks in here, adding different things in to get this ready to go here. That one of the interesting new ones which System Center had to bring in here was not just enable BitLocker, but you can see enable BitLocker for Windows to Go. So the specific thing there on that one, the enable BitLocker for Windows to Go, is to allow it to use the password for BitLocker in the process So remember, we talked about BitLockers, typically TPM plus PIN, and we don't use that with Windows to go at this point. Now, kind of on that same question with TPM, it's not that you can't use TPM with Windows to go, but it's the fact that you're going to be moving between a whole bunch of different machines. So one of the interesting things was, if you plug your Windows to go drive in, and at Microsoft we use TPM for PIN with BitLocker, but we also use Virtual Smart Card, which is unlocked by the TPM, and we store it on the host machine. It'll bleed through. That piece would bleed through. If you're on your host machine, plugged in, you could use it. So it's not that it doesn't work, but it's similar kind of to the Windows Store story with Windows 8. If you're starting to move across a bunch of different machines, it's not going to work the way that you really intended it to. So from here, right, we go on to the summary to confirm a whole bunch of these settings. So all the work that we've done here, and again, this is clicking through a whole bunch of these things. This shows all the information that we've put up on here, all the things that are required for it at this point. And this is all the IT experience. And again, we really just have to do this once, so we're not doing this every time we're deploying Windows to go if we're going to deploy it with the same settings for the same group of users here. All right, so this is new. This is different. This was what I mentioned in System Center. What they did for Windows to go was they took that inbox creator tool experience, and for the most part, they pulled that into System Center here. So this is the creator properties. This is where they're setting up the process for System Center to use that creator tool functionality to create the drive that we would use on our own inbox for simply using an evaluation drive. In the command line for this, there are some interesting things here. The first two we absolutely would want to do each time, the command lines for that. The first one is the creator tool. The WIM and the pre-staged WIM, we would want to have both of those, the executable for the Windows to Go creator, and then pointing to the WIM in this point. The last portion on there, we wouldn't have to do, but if we want to enable on a Windows 8 machine to boot from USB every time, we could tell the user's machine that every time you use this, you're going to boot from USB. That's something that if you have users with Windows 8 machines, or again, moving forward, it's going to work that same way with 8.1. You could put that command line in there, and it wouldn't require the end user to do it and to switch that or to change anything. Their machine would be set up to boot when they were ready to go this next time with the Windows to Go drive. All right. I'll finish this, and we'll go back to the script here. It's given me the 100% sign. Now, we'll switch gears really quickly, and then we'll see what the end user experience looks like for this. This is the application catalog, or the app catalog, that an end user would have for System Center Config Manager. There's only a couple things up here. There's Adobe Reader, but there's the Windows to Go Creator. We would simply send an email giving the instructions for someone to go ahead and get to this point, and then they would go into the app catalog. They'd click install, and it's going to start installing the application. Now, because of the way it's packaged and it's ready to go, it's going to get a lot of information down to the machine and ready to go. So someone could go on their own and do their work while this is happening. They don't have to sit here and wait for this process to finish or wait for everything to go. The package is going to download, and it's going to start that whole process there. And surprise, when I showed the creator tool, it looked exactly like this. It says almost the exact same things. Again, similarly here, if you don't have the right drive in here, it's not going to work, right? Or it'll tell you it's not a supported drive. The certified drives have a little bit of information in the drive that lets the creator tool know that it is a Windows to Go drive at this point, which other devices don't. If you remember when I plugged that other drive in, it didn't recognize the drive. It said it was a USB drive. These recognize the drive as a Windows to Go certified piece. And then I'm just going to simply click Next because I've got the right thing in there. And Next will take me to manageability, but Next would then get this whole process going, and my drive would be ready for me at the end of this process, and I could boot and be ready to go. So that's kind of the quick and dirty on the System Center one. Let's switch back here really quickly just to finish up the provisioning script piece. It finished this, and it got to that point, Got 100% finished, said the operation completed successfully here. So it's telling me a couple other things. And actually, I think that's one that comes up. Let's go. So boot file successfully created. It's applying SAN policies, applying other information here, and eventually we're done there. So then it copies the unattend file, gets information here. And we're done. So that script is meant, we parsed it all out in the process to show kind of through a click-through what it would look like. The process is meant, right, to go on its own. So we stopped it at the right points to be able to show it here. But the goal is to right, kick that off and just let it go there. Or if you're using the parallel process, to kick those off across a hub to multiple machines and get that ready to go as well. Let me show you all of the package pieces here that we put in there to show everything that's in it. So the things for this that we had in there, we have the Windows2Go demo.ps1, which is the script. We have the install.wim file. We got really good there at naming it with what we wanted it, but that's the file that was there. We have the BitLocker recovery password information, which then gets stored in there after I have saved this in the file. You'll notice that was 663 that was stored. And then the other information there. So it's pretty straightforward. The script just points to the different pieces that are required within that single location to do the work that it needs to get done to provision that script. So we will switch back. So from a manageability perspective, again, it's just Windows. And a lot of times we get questions, will this work, will that work, will all these things work? And again, it's Windows, so the majority of what we would expect to work does work on that. So all the group policies that work that we would want to have in place to have a fully managed machine could work if we wanted to use those for Windows2Go at this point. The store policy we talked about between Windows 8 and Windows 8.1, right? The disabled is that piece is going away in 8.1 with Windows2Go. And then the Windows2Go startup options. Of course, from a System Center perspective, it's fully manageable. We talked about the deployment process, and we had a question over here about how does it recognize it. That ability to recognize it as really a device, not what it's plugged into, allows you to do the other things which are listed on here, to inventory software, inventory it as a machine, and to manage it as a PC, more or less, or computer, more or less, as opposed to what it's plugged into. And that's what System Center SP1 really does there. It also allows to check settings compliance and all the other things that we would want to do on a regular Windows device to keep it up to date and ready to go. So kind of putting it all together here, if we really sum up all of the Windows2Go pieces, the main difference here and kind of the uniqueness that we really like about it, all the other pieces here that we're doing, we're pretty much used to doing with Windows because we've been managing Windows machines for a really long time. It's really the mobility and the capabilities that it gives us and the uniqueness of putting it all on a drive and being able to boot from many other machines on the go for all those scenarios, the BYOD, the contractor, those types of things, which is really the uniqueness of what's brought to the table. And the fact that I think that the engineering team looked at a lot of the things in the past that really got in the way of a bootable USB machine getting drivers, so using Windows Update to pull what's necessary there. All of those little types of nuances that we may have tried in the past when we were creating USB bootable drives, for the most part, are taken care of in this Windows feature here, which is kind of nice. And then it's supported. Something goes awry, something's not working how we want, we can call our support at Microsoft, and they can help us step through and figure out what's going on across all of these areas. So just a couple notes on unrelated content, and we're going to get you out of here on time. We certainly have time for questions as well. Just want to highlight just a few things here. If you're interested in other Windows sessions for other features or other things at this point, we have some located up here. We're also demoing at the Windows booth, so you can certainly stop by there and see us and ask questions and get a whole bunch more detail. We'll be at Ask the Experts. If you guys want to come by, I think there's free beer there too. So you get multiple nights of free beer, and what's better than that? And the Mobility Center at the Windows booth for that. So the next one here, I believe, these are the Windows Track resources, great places to find information. Last thing, if we get to it, I have to ask here, required, not that one, wow, is please complete an evaluation. So I want to get this one in before if we have any additional questions here. Make sure that you do go ahead and complete evaluations, put in feedback, just like you've been doing at the other sessions at this point. So happy to take any questions if we have anything additional that's floating around here. Yes. Thank you. So the question was, can you enroll and manage through Intune? It's not currently supported at this point. We have continuing talks with them about the use case and the ability to use it at this point. I have heard that there are customers who have tried it and have it working, but what you would run into, and I want to make this really clear, is it's not supported, and what that means is it hasn't been tested, and if you ran into something, you'd hear it's not supported at this point. Yes? Mm-hmm. So once you've handed it out, is there a way to block them from using the drive? So that really the only way is to do that. We had a question kind of similar earlier. A couple of the vendors have remote kill capabilities, which once it got onto the internet would send it and completely lock it down completely. From a Windows perspective, the one thing you could do to keep them from accessing is you would pull them out of AD and you would group policy pieces, right? You'd do some blocking there. That wouldn't stop them from using the drive at home, but that would block them from accessing back into the corporate network resources. So you'd block them at the network, not from using the drive itself. Oh, yes. Okay, so that's an interesting one. I think we should follow up on this one and figure out what you're doing, because I believe there's some things that we could work through in the scripting process, and which could help alleviate some of that at this point. Yeah, yeah. And are you guys using the offline domain join blob, which is okay? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so what the offline domain join piece does, we didn't really get into exactly what it's doing there, but it's getting ahead of the process and reaching back to CorpNet, and it's starting to pull down information and to start pushing information in there, which wouldn't be getting there through the process that you're doing. Right. Yeah, and the offline domain, yeah, exactly. So yeah, I can give you my card. If you want to send me a note, we can figure out who the right person to connect there on that piece would be.
Yeah, it's kind of related to that question.
Yeah.
What about the VPN, like two-factor authentication?
So the question was, will two-factor authentication work? Absolutely. So anything that you're going to use normally, for the most part, will work. You know, RSA, if you're using something other than that, would work. Any of those pieces will work just normally like it would on a VPN or with direct access as it would on our normal Windows. Yep. Yes. So the question was, what solutions do we see getting replaced by Windows to Go? Which is a good question, because there's a lot of things that, in essence, of getting at what we're trying to do, enabling, if we think a BYOD scenario or something like that, that Windows to Go plays nicely with. RDS, VDI can do some of those similar things. Some of our customers are looking at Windows to Go to replace some of those scenarios, so they don't have to support a lot of backend infrastructure for all of the people who are using VDI in that piece as well. Some of our customers don't want to deploy additional management infrastructure to manage, even if it's like an MDM type of a scenario, where someone's going to bring in their device and we're going to lightly manage or govern it in that aspect. They would prefer to use their existing infrastructure. So it could replace the need to buy something additional to manage a variety of devices, because I could boot in with Windows to Go at this point, and it's going to be managed just like the Windows machine at that point. I think those are a couple of the main ones. I think that it's not replacing, but it's going to be nice for the enterprises to be able to use it in that respect versus having to move in some area they might not be familiar with. Do you have any other areas you were thinking of? We're always welcome to hear what you guys are thinking as well, in terms of what you're using or anything. Yes? You know, we've received questions about that. You know, and right now, you know, certain there's nothing to share at this point in terms of that. I will tell you, we have MCS, Microsoft Consulting Services, has already done that. So they've put a server OS on a drive and have booted it, and they've had some capabilities there. Obviously, that's not supported. But we've heard some really interesting use cases where you could use that in the data center, replaceable. I mean, and it does make sense. And then at the end of the day, from our perspective, it comes down to testing, test resources, dev resources. And then is there a share for it? So it's a great scenario, and we could use it a couple times, but how many customers would use that implementation? So that's really what it would come down to from a testing perspective. Licensing aside, that would be another thing we'd have to think about. But then that would become a server piece that they could look at. So it is an interesting scenario. Pardon? Yeah. Yes. Yep, no, right there, sorry.
You mentioned a couple of times about relying on getting the driver from Windows Update.
Mm-hmm.
In a scenario where you can kind of control what the hardware is going to be and as a general rule, don't allow anything to come down from Windows Update, can you inject the drivers?
You can absolutely inject the drivers, so that's not an issue as well. Windows Update just provides, and absolutely enterprises just don't do that, right? They manage drivers, they manage everything on their own. And you can do that. You can absolutely do that with Windows to Go and be successful. You would need to think about ahead of time, you know, what types of machines, possibly those types of things. But some class drivers, something like that, you could inject, and you'd be just as good from that perspective, yeah. We're slowly losing people to the excitement of beer. Yeah. So I can hang around for a couple minutes if you guys have more questions. But certainly, again, thanks for coming.